Disease affects many of us, but few of us understand how and why it occurs. Welcome to a Disease Species Podcast, exploring the ongoing mechanics and research of disease, by your host, Braden Vogt. In this podcast, we discuss the background, science, and future of today's most relevant conditions. We break down these topics for all to understand, with no prior science knowledge needed. So everybody grab a seat and enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, Braden Vogt here, back with a Diseased Species Podcast, back for another episode. I've been really busy here, but finally back, able to record another episode, and today's episode will be on leukemia, which I'm really excited about. Had a lot of fun researching this, and I'm excited to teach you guys a little bit. So first, I want to go into why did I decide to do this topic specifically. So for me, children are something that's always been really important to me. I've had a lot of volunteer opportunities with children, and because of that, I'd love to do something in pediatrics. And leukemia is the most common form of childhood cancer. About 25% of all childhood cancer comes from leukemia. So that's one thing that got me interested. My sister also had a friend who was diagnosed with leukemia at a young age, and fortunately, he was able to beat it. He survived, but that also made me want to learn a little bit more. And then finally, I am actually a big country music fan. And the first artist that I really like was an artist called Rascal Flatts, who I still really enjoy. And I remember when I first started liking country music, they had this song out called Sarah Beth. And it's about a girl who gets leukemia and she can't go to the prom because all her hair falls out and nobody wants to take her. But eventually, some guy decides to shave his head and take Sarah Beth to prom. And I remember when I was a kid, that really hit me deep. So it stayed with me until I'm, 23 now? So, all right, well, I figure let's just dive right in, right? So first big question is, what is leukemia? A lot of you are probably aware that leukemia is a type of cancer, but you might not know a whole lot beyond that. So that's why you're listening here, right? So leukemia is cancer of the white blood cells. And as we go on with today's episode, we'll go into a little bit more detail as to what that really means and how that affects the body. But on top of discussing that, we're going to go into how it develops, how it's diagnosed, the different types of leukemia that I actually wasn't really aware that there were different types of leukemia until I got into doing my research here. And then really the actual reason that I want to do this podcast is that there are such new treatments coming out that are just absolutely amazing that when I saw those, I knew I needed to look more into leukemia. So I hope you guys enjoy today's episode, and let's get right into it. So what is leukemia? We talked how it's cancer of the white blood cells, right? Now, cancer is a term that's thrown around a lot, but yet again, it's something that's a little bit abstract and not everybody might really know what it truly means and why it's bad for you. So cancer, for a really broad term, is cancer is rapid, uncontrolled growth of cells. And being somebody with a biology background that works in medicine right now, I knew that. But for a while, I said, okay, well, there's a rapid growth of cells. So what does that mean? Why is that bad? And it wasn't really until I did this right here that I learned why that's bad for you, and you might be wondering why that is. So really the answer is, as far as this can be applied to any type of cancer, is that when cells are rapidly dividing, they're not performing the function that they're supposed to be doing, right? Rather than spending their time being a white blood cell, this white blood cell is not performing its function and is trying to divide into two. And then those two divide into four, and it spends all its time doing that rather than actually fighting infection like white blood cells are supposed to do, right? So that was really important for me to learn, and I think really sheds a lot of light on why cancer is so bad. Of course, other things occur along with it and any other cancer as to why it's bad. But if you have, say, lung cancer, then you have cells within the lungs that aren't doing their job. And the lungs are very vital for us to live. So that really sheds a little bit of light on that for me. And I think really cleared up a lot of the issue with cancer. So because leukemia is cancer of the white blood cells, in order to understand this, we really have to know a little bit more about blood. So when I was doing this research, I was sitting at my desk, just being Braden, eating some Chex Mix. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is exactly how I can explain blood. So if you're just looking at a bowl of Chex Mix, first thing you're thinking is, yep, that's some Chex Mix. Doesn't really cross your mind more than that, right? But if you were to really look at that Chex Mix hard, you would realize that Chex Mix is really made up of a lot of different things. You have your Chex, you have your pretzels, and then you have a lot of other different things that I can't really say what they are, but you get the point that really it's Chex Mix as a whole, like blood is as a whole, but within Chex Mix, there's a lot of different things in there. And that's the same thing with blood. When you see blood, you just think, oh yeah, that's blood, that's the red substance. But there's red blood cells that give blood that red tinge, but there's white blood cells within there. There's something called platelets within there. And then there's lots of different types of white blood cells, right? So really, blood is just a mixture of all these different kinds of cells and water together. And all of these different components actually come from one original cell that we'll get into in a little bit. But since it comes from that one original cell, all of these different kinds, red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, all of those start as the same kind of cell. And they go through this development process that I like to think of and will refer to throughout this episode like developing of a child. So right once a child's born, it is broken into two different groups. It's either a boy or a girl, right? And then once it's split like that, it goes through a development process. You have an infant first, which is starting to learn a little bit about the world and can do a little bit, but not really anything on its own. And then a child that knows a little bit more, but is still very incompetent. And then an adolescent teenager that knows a little bit, but is not quite ready to go out into the world. And then you have an adult that's finally fully mature. And that adult is what we think of as a white blood cell, say, or a red blood cell. But there's this stage of development with different stages throughout that process that you have to go through before you reach that. And that's just how development of these different kinds of blood cells work. We begin with that one kind of cell called a hematopoietic stem cell. You've probably heard of a stem cell before, probably have never heard of hematopoietic, but it's not really an important term to know. I just really want you to think of that as the starting point that can turn into any of these different kinds, but they all start from that one spot, right? So from the very beginning, we're divided into two categories, kind of like boy or girl, right? But you're divided into categories called lymphoid blast cells or myeloid blast cells, myeloblasts. Now, you don't need to know that term specifically, but I do want you to remember the M or the L, because that's how our different kinds of leukemias will be referred to and abbreviated as a little bit later once we get more into the leukemia aspect. So that's kind of like our infant stage, right? We've been born divided into two different categories, but these are really immature cells that really can't do a whole lot, right? So that's an infant. And then, so since we have our lymphoid on one side and myeloid on one side, they go through that development process, going from infant to child to adolescent until they become an adult. On the lymphoid side, kind of like lymph node, if you notice, that all comes from one area, you eventually turn into either T cells or B cells. And we've talked about T and B cells quite a bit on the vaccination podcast, the HIV podcast. Those were also important in the multiple sclerosis podcast. These are really important cells in the body. And they all come from that lymphoblast or lymphoid cell, right? So that's really that infant stage. They're all coming from that. Now, on the other side, remember, we have the myeloid cells, which is also like an infant, but it's just divided up into a different category, kind of like a boy or girl, remember? Now, these myeloid cells, they turn into all sorts of stuff that you don't need to know. They do turn into red blood cells. They also turn into a type of cell that creates platelets, and then many other types of cells, monocytes, neutrophils, basophils, but you don't need to be concerned with those terms. Really, I just want you to know that there's a division in two groups, and then those develop into different kinds of cells that make up blood in the end, okay? So hematopoietic stem cell into either lymphoblasts or myeloblasts and development from there. Okay, now we'll move on. So now that we've talked about how blood is made in a healthy adult, and we know that in leukemia, the white blood cells have gone amok, right? They're rapidly dividing. So something has gone wrong within this process. And what is it? So what happens is, you've probably heard of DNA before, and think of the DNA like the brain of a cell. It really tells it what to do. The DNA is everything. And in one of these cells, we have something called a mutation. Think of it like the brain is damaged. And when that happens, it starts to behave differently. The cell is not doing what it's supposed to because it's getting incorrect instructions from its DNA. So in order for leukemia to develop, we have to have two important mutations or damage to that brain, right? And they are this. One, you have to have a mutation that doesn't allow the lymphoid or myeloid, remember the infants, to continue developing, right? So they're stuck in some stage. It can be the infant stage, or it could say be the child stage of development. One of those two, it's stuck and it cannot develop any further. And that's an issue. But most importantly, once that's happened, we also have to have a mutation that stops normal cell division and changes it into cancerous cell division. So it's repeatedly dividing nonstop, right? So one cell is turning into two cells. Those two cells have the exact same damage, so they turn into four, which turn into eight, turn into 16. Before you know it, you have this exponential growth before you have all of these massive cells. So I think a good way to think about this in terms of, okay, we have these white blood cells that are dividing really rapidly and are also underdeveloped. A good way to think of this is, if you had a business and you were all of a sudden to bring 1,000 children, infants, into your business to try to get them to do the job, but these infants are incapable of being taught, kind of like how the red blood cells can't develop, white blood cells can't develop any further. They are incapable of being taught and trying to get them to continue on with your business. You'd probably fail, right? They just plain can't do the job. And on top of that, you have 1,000 of these kids running around everywhere. Even the people that do know how to do their job, there's no room for them. There's no resources for them because they're all being taken up by these kids. Everything's mayhem. What happens? Your business probably fails. Now, this is a little bit like what is happening in the body when these mutations have occurred, when we are starting to see rapid, uncontrolled growth of these immature white blood cells. Now,
it's important to know that this process of development of the cells occurs within the bone marrow. You might have heard of bone marrow before. Really, it's just this tissue inside the bones that does this process of developing our blood cells. And it's kind of like a container in there, right? You have a certain amount of space. And when we have these never-ending division of certain kinds of blood cells, we start to produce a ton of them. And this starts to take up all the space within that container, right? All the space within that bone, to the point where it is so filled with this certain cell that, by the way, can't do anything because it's like that child that can't learn, right? Then that starts to crowd out everything else. It starts to, not only in terms of space, kind of like we saw in our business, crowd everything out, but it's also taking up all the resources that are within that bone, all the sugar and the things that we need to grow. And this creates issues for all the other cells. Because although having white blood cells that, don't function, an issue that we see in leukemia is that also all the other kinds of blood cells aren't functioning because they're getting crowded out and we can't produce them because of the rapid growth of these other kinds of cells. And eventually what happens is, because you're producing so many of these white blood cells within that container, right, of the bone marrow, you start to seep out into the blood. And that's when you see these different counts of white blood cells. So how we've talked about up until now, just a little quick recap, remember, uncontrolled cell growth, right? Because we have that damage to the DNA or the brain, and that's creating all these cells that are taking up all the room and taking up all the resources for the other cells so they can't grow. And that is leaving us without these other cells that are important for us, these red blood cells, platelets, and so forth, and an overabundance of white blood cells that don't do anything for us. So that's where we're going to create issues. Now, what's going to happen is, the way that this would be diagnosed is you would just get a blood draw, right? Somebody sticks a needle into your arm, pull out some blood, and then you run some tests on this. Just really routine. This happens all the time. If you just go to your doctor for a physical, you're going to get this blood draw. And they're going to do something on this called a CBC, or a complete blood count. And what that does is it's measuring all the kinds of blood cells within your blood to come up with how much you have. And there's normal ranges. There's not one exact correct amount, but there are a range that is considered normal. And you can be with outside of that range and it not necessarily be concerning. But if you're way outside of a certain range, this likely is concerning. Now, what might we see? So remember, we have white blood cells that are immature and are decreasing the amount of everything else. So we would then expect to see a decrease in the amount of red blood cells we have, right? Because they can't grow, they're being crowded out, no resources. And what is this going to cause? Since red blood cells carry oxygen and oxygen gives us energy, this is why patients with leukemia feel fatigued all the time. They're tired. They feel like they have no energy. And that's because they can't get that oxygen that's needed to create energy in the body. They also might feel short of breath pretty consistently. Why is that? Exact same reason. Less red blood cells, which carry oxygen. So that means we have less oxygen. And the body is then feeling like it needs to breathe more rapidly in order to get that amount of oxygen we need in order to survive. Patients will also look a little bit more pale, and that's because we have less red blood cells. So it's not that red isn't really reflecting through quite as much. Now, before I did my research for this episode, if you were to ask me, well, Braden, what is one of the symptoms of leukemia? I would have said, easy bruising. and I would have been really excited and proud of myself. And that is true, but I didn't really know why that was. And some of you might know this as well. And the answer is that platelets come from one of those lines of blood cells that we talked about. And what do platelets do? Platelets help stop bleeding. Now, if we've crowded out the cells that create platelets so we can't create them anymore, a lack of platelets would then make us more likely to have more bruising because we don't have the platelets to stop that internal bleeding that causes bruising, right? So that explains some of the symptoms that we see. And within that complete blood count, that CBC, we'll see a difference in white blood cell count. It can either be really high or really low because we have this really rapid growth of white blood cells, yet they're at an immature stage, right? Remember, they're infants still. So it might not register as white blood cells when we do this count. So it could be high or it could be low. Patients with really high white blood cell counts on this are at a higher risk and need more intensive treatment, according to cancer.org, and are both are at an increased risk of infection because we don't have functioning white blood cells. Remember, we have white blood cells, but they're immature and they can't really do anything. We also might see weakness or weight loss, and something that I thought sounded incredibly painful is you have generalized bone pain, meaning you just feel like all your bones hurt so bad. Now, why might that be? Sounds terrible if you ask me, but the reason that it occurs is, remember, we have that bone marrow, which is kind of like a container that's getting all this growth inside of it with all these cells, and it's just running out of room, and it's creating pressure on the bones because it wants to keep making more cells, and that makes it hurt. So that is why we see bone pain in leukemia. Now, once we've done that blood draw and looked at it, that's more preliminary result. What they're going to look at next is they're going to do something called a bone marrow aspiration. They're going to stick a needle inside your bone. Sounds wonderful, huh? Pull out some of that bone marrow, and then they're going to put it under a microscope, that tissue, and they're going to look at it. And this is going to help them not only confirm leukemia, but also is going to help them determine what kind of leukemia that one might have. So really what we saw here was, oh, we have the rapid uncontrolled growth, blah, blah, blah. But if you want to take that one step further, the real cause of that was that mutation or that damage to the instructions or brain of the cell, damage to the DNA. So you could argue that that is truly the cause of leukemia, not necessarily the uncontrolled growth of white blood cells. Instead, it's the mutation that caused this issue. Now, then the next natural question is, what causes this mutation within the genes? Fortunately, leukemia does not appear to be hereditary. So if your father had leukemia at any stage of life, that does not make you more likely to have leukemia, which is good. So what is really causing that damage? Radiation is one potential cause of DNA damage. And what produces radiation? X-rays can produce radiation. Atomic bombs have radiation. Hopefully you're not exposed to a lot of those. Ironically, the person that was extremely influential in coming up with the structure of DNA, Rosalind Franklin, did it using X-rays, and X-rays have radiation, which damaged her DNA, and she died of cancer. So I thought that was kind of ironic. But key to leukemia, what's really causing the damage to DNA in leukemia, is something called a chromosome translocation. Now, this is kind of an abstract concept, but I want you to think of taking the head of somebody, chopping it off, and putting it onto somebody else's body. I guess, yeah, you still have all the components of a body, but does that body really work? No, probably not. Unless you're some crazy mad scientist, I don't know. But this is what's occurring in a chromosome translocation. It's a really abstract concept. Basically, there's a break in two different chromosomes, and these two chromosomes mismatch. So you can have part of chromosome 9 attached to chromosome 22, and that opposite part of chromosome 22 attached to chromosome 9. So you've just exchanged portions of it. And this is kind of like having that head on a mismatched body. Things are not going to go right. And this is what is seen in leukemia, especially one type that we're going to get into later called CML. You have something called a Philadelphia chromosome, and that comes through that chromosome translocation. Now we're going to get into different types of leukemias, and there's all sorts of subtypes that you can get into, but really I want to break this into four different kinds that I think are going to be really understandable for you guys. It's not going to be too difficult for you guys to grasp. Now, remember when we talked earlier about the development of blood? You're classified from the very beginning as either a boy or girl, right? Actually, in blood, that was either lymphoid or myeloid. And I want you to know that has nothing to do with being a boy or girl. Both boys and girls have lymphoid and myeloid. But you can see that there's a classification early. There's an early split off. And you're going to have lymphoblastic leukemias and myeloblastic leukemias. So that's two of the categories. Right from the beginning, you're split off. And those can go wrong in different ways, and that's how we have leukemia. Now, each of those has a different subtype. It can be either acute or chronic. So to break it down, you can have acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Remember, either acute or chronic, or myeloid or lymphoid. Acute lymphoblastic leukemia. You could have acute myeloid leukemia. Now we'll go to the opposite. You could have chronic lymphoblastic leukemia, or you could have chronic myeloblastic leukemia. So those are the four primary kinds of leukemia, but I really want to focus on just two that are the most relevant, I would argue, and I think the most interesting for us to discuss. So what we're going to talk about to start is ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Remember, so actually, I don't think I've discussed what acute versus chronic means. Now, remember, our life stage, infant, child, teenager, adult. In acute forms of leukemia, they come when they're less developed. So think of it in the infant stage. That is an acute leukemia. It's an infant. It is very little developed, and because of that, it really can't do anything, right? It hasn't learned anything through that development that allows it to do its function. And that's why it's acute. Because it can't do anything, it comes on. The symptoms that we see in this type of leukemia comes on very quickly, usually within weeks. Whereas a chronic leukemia is a little bit later in the stage of development. Say in the early adolescent years is when we would see, is kind of an analogy for the chronic forms of leukemia. It is developed a little bit and it can do a few functions, kind of like an adolescent could as a human. But if you were to take that early adolescent, say that it can't learn anymore and throw it out into the world, it still probably wouldn't do very well, would it? So that's what a chronic form of leukemia looks like. Now, sorry, I got a little bit ahead of myself. We're now going to jump into ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Now, this is the type of leukemia that we're going to see in children. And it is, as I said earlier, the most common childhood cancer and accounts for about 25% of cancer in children younger than 15, according to the NCBI. So this is very important for us to be able to fight against, right? Because we're going to see a lot of it in children who haven't had this rich life that most of us have had. So we want them to be able to have a chance, right? And as I said, because it's acute, it's in that really undeveloped form of a blood cell and it comes on really quickly. So that's the acute form. Second letter, L, lymphoblastic. If you recall, lymphoblastic comes from the B and T cells, which are what we use to fight infection. And since it is lymphoblastic, that means that these are the cells that are dividing extremely rapidly. It's usually the B cells that are actually dividing really rapidly, if you were curious, but that's not particularly important. Now, I talked about how translocations are important. It's also, interestingly, children with Down syndrome are much more likely to get leukemia. And why is that, you might wonder? Children with Down syndrome is also known as trisomy 21, meaning they have three chromosome 21s rather than two, like a normal child would have. And this is thought to make it more likely that a child develops leukemia. So if we're thinking that a child might have ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, they're going to go through that process that we discussed. They're going to get a blood count. If that comes out odd, then they're going to get that bone marrow aspiration, which sounds so painful, and I don't ever want to have that. And then they're going to run some tests, and they're going to see that it tests positive for a certain aspect in this lymphoblastic cell that is unique to a lymphoblastic cell. So they would then know that the child has acute lymphoblastic leukemia through this bone marrow aspiration and some tests that they run on that. As far as the chromosome translocations that we talked about, there's different kinds that you can have. You could have it between chromosome 12 and 21 that they kind of split off and then rejoin, or you could also have it between chromosome 9 and 22, which is that Philadelphia chromosome I talked about. And between 12 and 1 is more common in kids and is actually a lot more treatable. So that's good news that it is a lot more treatable. And we actually can treat ALL very well. We have very good survival rates with ALL, which is fantastic. But you do have to go through chemotherapy in order to do that. And that's a really difficult time, but it is still very... very reassuring to know that we can fight that. However, there are cases that we can't fight. I believe it's over 90% end up surviving that have acute lymphoblastic leukemia. But for that 10%, what are we going to do? We have to come up with something, right? And this is really why I wanted to do this topic, is for that group right there and this new treatment that's coming out. This treatment is called CAR T cells, and it's absolutely fascinating. This falls under the immunotherapy approach to treating cancer, which is basically enhancing the body's immune system to fight cancer on its own, which I really love just the approach and concept here, because I think if you give something the power to do it on its own, it's going to be more successful than requiring some sort of outside intervention. And that's kind of analogous to chemotherapy. What is chemotherapy? Chemotherapy is just poison to the body. It's like dropping a nuke on the body and killing all the cancer cells. But guess what? You take a lot of standby, a lot of other pedestrians out in the process. So, but with this CAR T cells approach, we're really not killing any other kind of cell. We're giving the body the power to fight on its own. So this has seen some pretty amazing results in children that had that have ALL and have had two lines of unsuccessful chemotherapy. So remember that 10% that we talked about. Previously, we didn't really know what to do, and that 10%, there was a good chance that they were going to die. But CAR T cells, after a few trials, they're still looking into it more, but 70 to 90% of this group went into remission after receiving experimental CAR T cells. And I think that's absolutely incredible, because two lines of our normal treatment didn't work. You would expect that a different treatment a little bit works, but you're still probably going to lose a lot. Nope, 70 to 90% were able to survive using CAR T cells. And I think that's incredible. So then you might be thinking, okay, you're all hyped about CAR T cells. What are they? I'm going to get into that. Cancer, one of the aspects of cancer that makes it extremely difficult for the body to fight is cancer has a sort of invisibility cloak on it for my Harry Potter fans. And if you're not a Harry Potter fan, then you're missing out. But so basically, the body just doesn't recognize it as a bad cell. It thinks it's just one of its own cells, and to leave it alone. So we're not going to attack that invisibility cloak. CAR T cells give the body the ability to take that invisibility cloak off of the cancer cells and attack it as if it is a bad cell that it actually is in reality. So how does it do this? If you recall from the other podcast episodes, the T cells are like the generals of the immune system. Without them, nothing happens. They initiate it all. But interestingly, these generals are not doing anything against cancer typically because it has that invisibility cloak. So we need to think of a way, how can we activate these T cells against cancer cells? And that's what CAR T cells are. So what we do is we take the T cells out of the body and then we give them a receptor, which is basically, think of it as something that can take that invisibility cloak off. So we give it a receptor to bind to and recognize the cancer. And then once we've given that receptor to the T cell, it becomes a CAR T cell, which stands for chimeric antigen receptor T cell. You don't need to know that name. Just remember, it takes the invisibility cloak off of that cancer cell. And then once we've given it the ability to take the invisibility cloak off, it is infused back into the body. Amazingly, it only requires one infusion of CAR T cells. And these white blood cells begin fighting that cancer and killing off that cancer. Now, it would be amazing if there were no side effects. There are still side effects of CAR T cells, even though you might not think, because it's the body's own cells, but there are. But they're not the same as chemotherapy. We're not having our hair fall out, so nobody wants to take us to the prom like in Sarah Beth. And to me, that is just truly incredible. And I'm really excited to see this type of approach in CAR T cells be used for possibly a first line treatment. I know they're starting to try to develop CAR T cells and use them as a first line treatment. And that really excites me. So there you go. That's why I wanted to do this episode, but don't worry, we're not done. So we talked about ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. There's also acute, remember, early in that developmental process, myeloblastic, the other side of development, leukemia. But there's a lot of different types of this, and this isn't quite as clinically relevant, so I'm not going to go into it. But if you were curious, remember there's four main subtypes, and AML is one of those subtypes. Next, we're going to get into chronic leukemias. Now, recall, this occurs when there is a little bit more development, when figuratively the blood cell is in the adolescent stage of development. It has a little bit of development. It can do some things, but it's really not quite a fully developed white blood cell that can do all the functions. So you have the CLL, chronic lymphoblastic leukemia, and CML, chronic myeloblastic leukemia. CLL you'll usually see in very old patients over 80, many of which are asymptomatic, so meaning they don't really see any symptoms. This just comes up if you were to do all the tests. And in that case, they don't even treat these patients. So I'm not really going to focus a whole lot on CLL because it's not quite as clinically relevant. But what I do want to get into is CML, chronic myeloblastic leukemia. Now, this is a type of leukemia that is usually seen in patients 40s, which I wasn't real aware of. I always was really only aware of ALL, the childhood form of leukemia, but you can get leukemia at different ages, and CML typically comes on in the 40s. Now, as a OHSU employee, I currently do research at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University. And here, their absolute claim to fame. You couldn't go a week by reading OHSU's announcements and not hear about this medicine called Gleevec, which was developed by the current director of the Cancer Institute, Brian Druker. And like I said, this is their claim to fame. They absolutely love talking about how they came up with this, as they should, though, because this is one of the most important medicines in the world. And so what is Gleevec, you might be wondering? Gleevec helps fight CML. So it was actually developed by somebody other than Brian Druker, but this individual came to Brian Druker and asked what might be a good way to use this medicine. And he really pushed the use of this medicine in CML because he was an expert on CML. And the company actually that came up with the medicine, they thought it wasn't really any good and they didn't really want to try it in clinical trials. But Druker really annoyed them and pestered them until they eventually agreed just to get them to shut up. Well, turns out that made Novartis billions of dollars, which is now one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world. So they have Druker to thank. Ironically, Druker did not make a dime off of Gleevec because he didn't come up with it. He just captained the clinical trials through, but he doesn't really have any rights to the patent of the medicine. So I thought that was ironic. But now we're going to get into why is Gleevec important. You also might hear it referred to as imatinib, but we're going to refer to it as Gleevec. In the 1970s, CML was really considered to be deadly. If you were diagnosed with CML, your life expectancy was not looking good, and considering that you're often diagnosed this in your 40s, that was devastating. In the 1970s, the 8-year survival rate was 20% of CML. Now with Gleevec, 87% survival rate. And that includes all deaths, not just deaths related to leukemia. So that actual rate could be even higher of survival. And this is according to the journal Blood. And I think that was absolutely incredible. That is a 67% increase in the 8-year survival rate. Gleevec is used in CML patients that are Philadelphia chromosome positive. Remember that rearrangement of chromosomes together that creates this bad mutation. And that Philadelphia chromosome creates something called a constantly active tyrosine kinase receptor. You don't need to know that term. Think of that tyrosine kinase receptor as amphetamines for the cell. It just makes the cell always on, always dividing rapidly over and over and over and over again, just unlimited. So what Gleevec does is Gleevec comes in and tries to stop that drug deal of amphetamines and says, you need to calm down and stop dividing. It stops that tyrosine kinase receptor. And this not only slows the growth because it doesn't have the amphetamines to keep it going rapidly over and over again, but it also causes cell death. And we want to kill off those cancer cells, right? That's how we want to attack the cancer. So that's how Gleevec works, which is an extremely important medicine. It's on the World Health Organization's necessary medicines for the entire world. So this is basically a required medicine that the world needs, and this was helped created by somebody at OHSU, which I think it's pretty incredible to work at an institution that came that helped come up with that. Gleevec is referred to as a, quote, targeted therapy, which is different than chemotherapy. Remember, chemotherapy is just killing everything. But Gleevec was one of the first of its kind, and what it's doing is it's looking at what is different about a cancer cell, and let's attack that specifically rather than just killing all sorts of cells. And that's why it's different than chemotherapy, and this is really the direction that cancer therapies are going, is we want to know specifically about the cancer and what's different about this cell, and that can give us a more targeted approach, which is why it's called targeted therapy. Other kinds of therapies that are similar are, we have these targeted therapies, we have checkpoint inhibitors, which basically when you're dividing, you have to go through a checkpoint, and this stops it at that checkpoint and doesn't allow it to continue growing. And we also have immunotherapies like the CAR T cells that I discussed. And in my opinion, these are really the future of cancer research. I find them really fascinating. And one last little tidbit that I want to go over. I always was wondering, why is chemo so damaging to the body? And specifically, I always wondered, why does the hair fall out when you have chemotherapy? Why specifically the hair? Why doesn't something else start to fall off? And the answer is that chemotherapy targets the extremely rapidly dividing cells, like cancer, extremely rapidly dividing. But within the body, there's also other cells that need to divide very rapidly to survive, to continuously replenish. And one of those cells are the hair cells. They divide very rapidly. And because chemo attacks these cells, that's why the hair falls out. So that was a really interesting tidbit of information for me to know, and I thought you guys might enjoy as well. Okay, well, this was a little bit longer episode. Sorry, I got a little bit excited talking about the CAR T cells. But I hope you guys really enjoyed it. Hope it was interesting, fun, and informative. And hopefully I'll see you for our next episode. Thank you very much. All right, everybody. That'll be it for today's episode. Quick reminder that this is for educational purposes only and is not to be used as medical advice. We hope you enjoyed the episode and check back in soon for what's next.